विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिनि नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much for joining this session. I again apologize for the delay. I had some glitch, technical glitch with my Zoom. Anyway, so last week we completed discussing on the theme of Janasangha. And somehow due to some miscommunication, the summary sheet is not ready. So I will do a recap using my apologies again for that. So last week we completed the discussion on Janasangha, and in that we discussed Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sila Swami Maharaj's commentary on Janasangha. I will do a quick recap of that, and then we shall move ahead to the last of the six obstacles to our bhakti, which is Lavalyam. So Maharaj discussed that Janasangha means to be very approachable to the ordinary public for politics, sociality, feeding the poor, etc. Being very openly available. And he said there are so many false ideologies and misconceptions around. To be easily captivated by them is called as Janasangha. And Sadhu Sangha is that which promotes us towards a higher cause. And then Janasangha or Asat Sangha is just the opposite. So he says that we must have eagerness to mix with the sadhus of a higher type. But instead of associating with sadhu, if we allow ourselves to mix with the ordinary public in the name of preaching or any other thing, then it is called as Janasangha, he says. So he says that actually we have a long journey ahead from Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartana Vritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava and Prema. It's a long journey ahead. But in that journey, it is going to be filled with much trouble. But all that trouble can be minimized if we have good association on that long journey. So basically, even though the verse itself, the essay itself is talking about Janasangha, but here, Srila Bhakti Rakshak Satsangha, proper Sadhu Sangha, because when we get proper nourishment in the association of sadhus, then we can overcome the desire for satsanga. Satsanga mukta dussango hatum notsahate budaha kirtyamanam yashoyasya sakrit akaranya rochanam. You know, if we have good association and if we are nourished in the association, in good association, then we will not be carried away by bad association. Right? Like that. So he says in the association of the devotees, by discussing about Krishna conscious topics, then we can easily forget the weariness of the journey. And then Maharaj quotes this verse, Krishna bhakti janma mula hai sadhu sangha, Krishna prema janme tehu punar mukhya unta. He says, sadhu sangha is not just the root cause of devotion, but sadhu sangha also becomes the most essential limb even after we attain Krishna Prema. Krishna Prema Janme Teho Punar Mukhya Anga. Even when one's dormant love for Krishna awakens, the association with devotees is still the most essential. Like that. So then it is mentioned that our favorable companions can help us in our journey towards the infinite. So, and he says the devotees are all in all from the beginning till the end. Like that. So he says that only with the interchange of our thought, bad, hope, exchange of our thoughts, whether they are good, bad, hope, despair, etc. Everything they can appreciate, and in a group we can go on. Otherwise, if we are alone, then we will think, oh, what am I doing? I am just wild goose chasing like that. So, and even when Krishna puts us in a difficult situation, then we may leave our bhajan and go elsewhere searching for a solution. Like that. So therefore, he says that this, he mentions that how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave so much stress on the association of devotees, and he, to the extent he told, Dushtamana tumi kisera vaishnava pratishtara tare nirjhanera gare tava harinama kevala kaitava. So he said that just for pratishta, you are doing some nirjan bhajan. So tava harinama kevala kaitava. So when you think that you can do all this harinam alone, without the association, you are that chanting of harinam only for your pratishta is just kaitava dharma. This is all hoax of maya. You won't be able to fight for a long time if you are alone. Always try to be with others. Like that. And then he speaks about this Napoleonic chair. Like that. And then we also saw that Srila Raghunath Das Goswami also in Manas Siksha, when he is talking about overcoming various categories of anarthas, for most of the categories he gives association of devotees as the solution. Overcoming those anarthas. And then also Asat Krishna, Hridaya Daurbalyam, Tattva Vibhramant Aparat. Especially for Hridaya Daurbalyam, which is weakness of heart, which manifests in the form of envy, desire for fame, deceitfulness or fault finding, and attachment to objects unrelated to Krishna. We saw last time that these are symptoms of a heart which is malnourished, which is not properly nourished with Vaishnava Preeti. So the solution for this malnourished heart, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is follow Nectar of Instruction, verse 4. Dadati pratigrinnati guhyam akhyati prachati bhungte bhojayate cheva shadvidam priti lakshanam. When we have these six loving exchanges with devotees, and strengthen that relationship with the devotees, then when the heart becomes nourished in their loving affection, then the symptoms of malnourishment in the form of envy, desire for fame, and all these things will go away. Like that. So this is where we ended our discussion on Janasanga last week. So today we have to start the sixth and the final obstacle to our progress on the path of devotional service, which is Laulyam. But before we discuss the theme of Laulyam, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions based on our discussion on Janasanga, whatever we have discussed about unfavorable, unholy association, how it can act as an obstacle for our progress on the path of devotional service. If any quick discussion points or questions, you share your thoughts and speak, or type your questions in the chat box, whatever you feel comfortable. Anything anyone would like to share, ask, and add. Okay. So if there are no discussion points or questions, then we will move on to the sixth essay. Okay. There is one hand up. Ramacharya Prabhu. I will just unmute you. Yes, Prabhu.
Dhanvat Prabhu, Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, maybe I would have missed, I'm not sure. But just wanted to kind of understand You emphasized very nicely the importance of Jan Sangha and especially Sadhu Sangha. But are there any criteria, like what are some of the topmost criteria that we are looking at to identify whom we should associate, whom we should not? Some of the things that's easily visible rather than being something subtle. Is there something that you would like to advise?
Srila Rupa Goswami says, Sajatiya Ashes Nikte Sadhu Sangha Svatovare. He says, Sajatiya Ashe means like-minded. Like-minded means sharing a common definition of success in devotional life. Then snigde, it is not sufficient just to have that like-mindedness, but there has to be affection, mutual affection between the two of them. Then, of course, sadhu sangha, it should be devotees association. And svatovare, one should ideally look for an association. Than oneself. Vare means it also means if even it may be association of peers, but if the peers are mature enough to inspire each other to progress in the path of devotional service, that is also very good association. So these are the criteria. This is the criteria which Srila Rupa Goswami gives. Sajatiya Ashe Snigde Sadhu Sangha Svatovare. Is that okay?
Yes, Prabhuji. Where these four items are mentioned, Prabhu?
Bhaktirasamritasindhu.
Huh?
Bhaktirasamritasindhu.
Oh, it's in BRS. Okay. Okay, Prabhuji. Thank you. Yes, this is perfect. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Anything else anyone would like to share as at? Okay, so we will move on to the next discussion, which is on Laulyam. So Laulyam, the general understanding is ardent longing or greed, but there are other meanings and deeper meanings of this Laulyam also. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his essay, he talks about three types of Laulyam. Okay. So the meaning of the word Laulyam, he says, is restlessness, greed, and desire. Okay. These are the three types of meanings of the word Laulyam. Restlessness, greed, and desire. So first we will discuss Laulya in the form of restlessness. Okay. One is restlessness of the mind and restlessness of the intelligence. So in restlessness, he is talking about two kinds. Restlessness of the mind and restlessness of the intelligence. Okay. So first, let's discuss the restlessness of the mind. So he says, the chitta or the mind has the propensity for following the dictates of the senses. The nature of the conditioned mind is to run after the senses. Actually, if you see in Bhagavad Gita, There are two hierarchies which are mentioned. So in one of the hierarchies, it is mentioned, Indriyani paranyahuhu, indriyebhya param manaha, manasastu parabuddhe, yo buddhe paratastu saha. So in this particular verse of Bhagavad Gita, the hierarchy that is mentioned is the senses are superior to the sense objects, the mind is superior to the senses, intelligence is superior to the mind, in the sense it controls the mind, and the soul controls the intelligence. Okay, there is a question in the chat box. Are chitta and mind not different? The word chitta many times is used to indicate mind. But if you are talking about chitta and mana, then chitta is different. But many times the word so here the mind here actually refers to the antakarana. I don't want to get into that discussion, but the point is the word chitta is not always used to strictly indicate one of the four antakaranas, which is chitta, mana, buddhi, and ahankar. So when this kind of a usage is there, chitta and mana, or chitta and mind are different. But in general case, mostly the word chitta is used to indicate this whole, this is the central processing unit, which processes the sensory signals and converts them into emotions. Okay. So this whole entity is also many times called as chitta. So here the word chitta is used in that sense. It is not, even though it is talking about mind, but that mind is this whole entity. Anyway, or you can say here sometimes chitta is used to indicate the mind also separately, because next he is going to talk about buddhi also, restlessness of the intelligence. So here chitta refers to the mind only, even though sometimes chitta can refer only to chitta and not mind. But the word chitta is many times used in many different ways. Here it refers just to the mind. So anyway, so the point is, Bhagavad Gita talks about this hierarchy. Indriyani paranyahu indriyebhya param. Yo buddhe paratasprusaha. That the senses are superior to the sense objects. Mind is superior to the senses. Intelligence is superior to the mind. And the soul is superior to the intelligence. This explanation is there. But there is always there is another hierarchy that is mentioned in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano anuvidiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayur navam ivambasi. So he says, even here he says, the sense object is controlling the senses. Indriyanam hi charatam. The senses are running after the sense objects. And what do they do? Yan mano anuvidiyate. And it is pulling the mind. The senses are pulling the mind. Which means the senses are more powerful than the mind. Tadasya harati pragyam. And this mind is pulling the intelligence. So which means mind is more powerful than the intelligence. Vayur navam ivambasi, just like a boat, unfettered boat in the middle of a water, big water body. It is tossed here and there by the winds. And this uncontrolled intelligence affects the soul. It creates problem for the soul's progress. So, if you see, it is the same book, Bhagavad Gita, which seems to suggest totally opposite hierarchies. On one side, says soul is intelligence controls the mind, mind controls the senses, and senses control the sense objects. Whereas the same Bhagavad Gita says the sense objects control the senses control the mind controls the intelligence, and the intelligence controls the soul. So now, this is quite confusing. Which is the right hierarchy and which is the wrong hierarchy? You know, we may have this question. Okay. So, there are two kinds of personalities. Okay. So, this is the higher hierarchy. and this is the lower hierarchy. For a materialistic person, it is the lower hierarchy. And for a liberated soul or a pure devotee, okay, it is the higher hierarchy, which is acting, okay, higher hierarchy, okay. But what about the sadhakas like us? For sadhakas like us, which hierarchy is acting? Would anyone like to answer this question? For sadhakas like us, which hierarchy acts? You can either type in the chat box or you can raise your hands and you can try to answer this question. Which of these two hierarchies acts in your case? Let me not ask a generic question. I am asking you a pointed question. In your case, which of these two hierarchies act? Yes, Mother Gail.
Well, I would guess that we vacillate between both hierarchies.
We vacillate. Is that what you find in your case, Mother?
Sometimes the senses are controlled by the mind. Sometimes the mind are controlled by the senses, depending upon, you know, how weak or strong I feel, I think.
Okay. So why do you think is that vacillation? Okay, let me ask you a more simpler question here. Why is it that you can't constantly be in the higher hierarchy?
Because of a lack of determination.
Determination for?
For using my mind and body strictly in Krishna's service.
Okay. And why you are not able to constantly be in the lower hierarchy?
Well, I imagine when situations are more conducive for better determination, then I will not allow my senses to take control.
Now, my question is, what?
That's the lower hierarchy. Right? Hierarchy. The lower hierarchy. I'm sorry, Prabhu, can
why I
can
are you? I was asking, why are you not determined to follow the lower hierarchy?
Because I'm trying to live my life according to Krishna conscious values.
This is the answer I was expecting. So this vacillation or this oscillation between the higher and lower hierarchies is because as devotees, we have accepted a value system which wants us to act according to the higher hierarchy. The soul has to dictate the intelligence, and the intelligence getting the inspiration from the shastras must dictate the mind. Be attached to this, don't be attached to this, and the mind has to dictate the senses, and the senses have to dictate the sense objects. We know this. This is what is expected of us. But because of living a materialistic life for so many lifetimes without a value system which is guided by the scriptures, we are constantly conducted by the lower hierarchy where we allow the sense objects to control our senses. Our senses naturally gravitate towards the sense objects, and such uncontrolled senses control the mind, and the violent mind controls the intelligence, and that unsteady intelligence pulls the soul towards lower regions, hellish life. So for the sadhakas, it is a dynamic hierarchy. You know, I don't know if you have heard of in equilibrium reactions, the forward reaction and the backward reaction are happening at the same at the same speed. So therefore, similarly for us, the higher hierarchy takes over sometimes when we are in good association, when we are properly nourished and we are properly hearing and chanting. But when we are in not good association, when we become weak, when we feel malnourished, then suddenly the lower hierarchy kicks in and we start becoming more vulnerable. So in this way, it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth like that. So the point that here Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning is the mind has the propensity for following the dictates of the senses that indicates the lower hierarchy actually. So when that is the lower hierarchy, when the mind follows the dictates of the senses and becomes absorbed in a particular object, attachment or aversion arises. In fact, I'm sorry. There are actually three hierarchies. Okay. Let me elaborate on that. Okay. So there is there are three hierarchies. First is the hierarchy of a materialist. Okay. Then there is hierarchy of a self-realized person. Okay. Then there is hierarchy of a perfected devotee. Okay. This is second, this is third, and then there is fourth, which is hierarchy of a sadhaka. Okay. The hierarchy of the materialist is that the sense objects are on top. They are controlling the senses, which are controlling the mind, which is controlling the intelligence, and which is dragging the soul to all kinds of places within the material world. The hierarchy of a self-realized person is the exact opposite. Right? The soul is controlling the soul is controlling the intelligence, and intelligence is controlling the mind. Mind is controlling the senses, and the senses are controlling the sense objects. But for a perfected devotee, all of this is spiritualized. Okay. All of this is spiritualized. So there is no fixed hierarchy actually, in one sense. His senses, because he is seeing all the sense objects as being for the pleasure of Krishna. Again, for such a person, the sense objects may attract his senses for pleasing Krishna. And the senses may attract the mind. Okay. And the mind may attract the intelligence. Like that. So, this hierarchy of a perfected devotee may look very similar like the hierarchy of a materialist. So, but this hierarchy is due to, or the materialist is due to spontaneous material emotions. Okay. And this hierarchy of a perfected devotee is due to spontaneous spiritual emotions. So they may look very similar, but it is very difficult. You know, they will run after whatever they see. They will see, when they see the form of Krishna, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was running after the Devadasi when she was singing, you know, Jayadev Goswami's Gita Govind. You know, literally, the Devadasi was the sense object. The sense was running behind. The mind was running behind the senses. The intelligence was running behind the mind. It was and or when he would see Jagannath, or Yamuna, he would run and jump into the ocean. He would run and jump into the ocean, just like a materialist, when he would see a sense object, would run behind it. And the mind would run behind the senses, intelligence would run behind the mind. Similarly, a perfected devotee's hierarchy looks very similar to a hierarchy of a materialist, actually. And the hierarchy of a sadhaka is fluctuating hierarchy. So this is the struggle. The higher hierarchy is guided by his Shraddha or faith. And the lower hierarchy is guided by his conditioning or his Swabhava. Okay. So therefore, you know, it is back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. This keeps happening. But the more he progresses, then the more he is able to act on the higher hierarchy till he reaches the higher stages of devotion, when the lower hierarchy again takes over. Of course, in that case, that is not the lower hierarchy. It is the highest hierarchy. In the highest hierarchy, it will be the sense objects which are controlling the senses. Senses will control the mind. Mind will control the intelligence. But these are all sense objects. But this whole dynamics is platform of true ego. And this whole dynamics is happening on the platform of false ego. Okay. So this person has a material identity. This person has, you know, Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Dasa Dasanudas. He has an identification as a servant of Krishna. And for him, he is acting for Krishnendriya Preeti. So, even though his senses are running after the sense objects, but it is for the pleasure of Krishna. So, there are, in this way, there are four kinds of hierarchy. And mostly we will find ourselves in this kind of fluctuating hierarchy. And for a sadhaka, he has to shut down this lower hierarchy and come to this intermediate hierarchy where he is controlled by the guidance of the shastras. But when he comes to that platform of, of controlled by the guidance of the shastras, then from there he can come to the platform of spontaneous spiritual emotions, which is the hierarchy of the perfected devotee. So therefore for a devotee So he may start with the this is the devotee's journey. Okay. The devotee's journey starts with hierarchy. Okay. Then the second stage is the stage of struggle. Then comes at somewhere around the stage of nishtha. Okay. Comes the stage of the self-realized person. The higher hierarchy, which is in which the intelligence is guiding the mind, mind is guiding the senses, senses are guiding the sense objects. But then again, he goes to the higher hierarchy, still higher hierarchy is the hierarchy of spiritual emotions. This is the stage of perfected devotee. Okay, this is the gradual. So right now we have gone past the first stage. We are in the second stage. But gradually when we would come closer to nishtha, then we will reach the third stage where we will always be able to act according to the guidelines of the scriptures, and our intelligence guided by the scriptures will control the mind, and that mind will control the senses and sense objects. But when we go above nishtha to ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema, gradually we will leave behind this stage also and come to this stage where the spiritual emotions take over, and then again the sense objects will start controlling the senses, senses will control the mind, mind will control. Like that. I mean, I don't know if I've confused you more or if it makes sense. Any quick comments, discussion points, questions on this topic? Anything anyone would like to share? Yes, Mother Gail, as always. Yes.
Yeah, actually, I need to clarify the distinction between the perfected soul and the, I think it was the self-realized soul.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
What is the difference? That's what you want to
know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I want to actually. The writing is not so clear for me, actually. The handwritten things.
Yeah, sometimes I can't read and understand what I have written. So. I'm so artistically gifted, so. Anyway, so what I was telling is, I understand your question. The self-realized person is a jnana yogi who may achieve the stage of self-realization.
Liberation.
Yeah, uh-huh. Where the material emotions are completely gone, but spiritual emotions have not yet been activated.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the perfected devotee is on the platform of spiritual emotions. So, such a person is completely emotionally controlled. Just as the material
boy, you know, your voice drops actually sometimes. Emotions. You know, sometimes your voice drops, you know, all through class, sometimes your voice drops so I can't catch everything. So with the perfected devotee, Can you repeat what about the emotions? Nice. He's like the materialist, right? It looks like the materialist, where the sense objects are controlling the mind, right?
Yeah, but the sense objects are for the pleasure of Krishna.
Yes.
So when he looks at something which can potentially please Krishna, the sense get completely attracted to it, and the mind follows that sense, and the intelligence mm-hmm. follows the mind. You know, there is no deliberation. Mm-hmm. This can please right. Krishna, so he runs. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it is not for personal gratification. It is for gratification of Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now, so that one I had understood. I think it's really the self-realized soul. In his case, right?
In his case, so,
mm-hmm.
there is, because there is no spiritual emotions, he just mm-hmm. sees... In one sense, he sees that what is best for my liberation? What do the shastras say? What do the scriptures say? So that his intelligence in that sense is guiding his mind, and his mind is guiding his senses, and the senses are guiding his sense objects. In that way, it looks like a very controlled operation. You know, he's very peaceful. He's not agitated. But these two personalities, the materialist and the perfected devotees, they're high.
Oh my goodness.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's description, is it breaking too much, Mataji?
It breaks. Well, two classes have been breaking. Been breaking. But anyway, The materialist and the self, and the materialist and the perfected soul, that's fine. You know, that's fine for me. The
self-realized person.
The sadhaka, he is fluctuating between, let's say, the materialist hierarchy and the
self-realized
person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then it's fine now. I guess it's fine now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's the hierarchy of the self-realized person. That's what we see in chapter 3 of the Gita, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. This is fine. Thank you so much, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Nam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. This self-realized perfected devotees, why they should follow this lower hierarchy of materialists? I'm not clear. Why it is necessary for them to be driven by sense objects?
That's what I'm telling you. It looks like that. But they are acting on the platform of Krishnendriya Priti.
Yeah, whatever is pleasing to Krishna, they will do. So there is no hierarchy for them at all.
But that is not for a Vaidhi Sadhaka. They will ask the scriptures. What is pleasing to Krishna? The scriptures will say. So the scriptures will say, which means the intelligence will guide.
Okay.
But for perfected devotees, their spontaneous affection for Krishna will guide. So
there is no hierarchy for them.
Looking at the I'm just telling you, bro, when a materialist looks at a sense object, he runs after it because the sense object is attracting his sense, and the sense pulls the mind and the mind pulls the intelligence. Similarly, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, I'm just giving an example because the example is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which we can relate to. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looks at Jagannathji, he's just running. His eyes are pulled towards Jagannathji.
And what you're saying is everything is Uddipan for them.
So, therefore, that is the realm of spiritual emotions. So, a materialist is an emotionally driven person, material emotionally driven person, and a perfected devotee is spiritual emotionally driven person. Both of them, they look like quite... whimsical people, but it is quite different. One is
suppose a perfected devotee sees 2-3 sense objects. He has a choice which one he should.
He has no choice.
So he is good.
He has no choice.
How can he simultaneously use all 3-4 sense objects at a time? He has to choose one of them, no?
No, what? No, yeah. I mean, that is that choice even a materialist has.
Yeah, but materialist will choose that sense object which attracts him most.
The spiritualist will also choose that sense object which attracts Krishna the most.
Right. Only thing is the attraction of Krishna takes over instead of attraction
thing,
of...
Right? So just that one is acting on the platform of Atmendriya Preeti, another is acting on the platform of Krishnendriya Preeti, that's all. But otherwise their actions look very same. A perfected devotee looks as agitated, as agitated on a sensory platform as a materialist, or sometimes as a perfected devotee may be much more agitated on a sensory platform, seemingly, than a materialist also. Because he is just like a materialist is eager for sense gratification. A perfect spiritualist is many times much more eager for the gratification of Krishna's senses. So their actions look very same.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Anything else anyone would like to share as an I'm sorry, I don't know. It's Wi-Fi only here, but somehow I don't know what's wrong with my internet for the last few days. You know, the internet keeps breaking in between. I'm sorry. So, okay, any other questions? Have I confused you more, or does it make any sense at all? You know, I mean, there was no need for so much elaborate discussion in one sense. We could have taken it up later, but I think I have sort of really maybe confused you a little bit more. But anyway, if you have not understood much of it, let's get back to the basics. Let's get back to what is exactly mentioned here. Yes, Muktakesh Prabhu.
Prabhuji, just wanted to clarify, like, what I understood, is it correct or not? So what I understand, this perfected devotee, he need not, like a sadhaka, perfected devotee need not exercise his intelligence, whether it is favorable for Krishna consciousness and all these things. Naturally, because his senses are pure, so that hierarchy will follow, right, no?
Because his senses are pure, naturally it will run towards Krishna's pleasure only. Even though it may seem like the senses are indiscriminately running behind the sense objects, the mind is not able to control the senses, the intelligence is not able to direct the mind, it may look like that. And it is true also. It is true also. But the point is, they don't have to, because it is for Krishnendriya Preeti.
Mm-hmm.
When the senses are so attuned for the pleasure of Krishna, when the mind is so attuned for the pleasure of Krishna, when the intelligence is so attuned for the pleasure of Krishna, either one of them is controlling the other, it does not really make any difference for them. Isn't it?
Yes, yes, yes.
So, that is the point. So, but mostly they seem to be very, very whimsical people. They just run as soon as they see Jagannathji, they see, they run. Radhasi is singing Jayadeva Goswami's Gita Govind. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu runs after that person as if a material, male is attracted to a female. As soon as he sees a beautiful female form, he runs without much deliberation. So similarly, but it is for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the difference. Does it make sense?
Yes, yes, bro. Yes, bro.
Yes, Mother Gail.
Because this is a long-term problem I've had about the relationship between mind and sense objects. So, you know, we've always heard that mind is the director, right, of the senses. It directs.
Mind is supposed to direct the senses. But many times it may not be the case.
Yeah, just like the intelligence is supposed to conduct the mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it might not be the case.
Might not. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and similarly, I guess, of the relationship between the senses and the sense objects, can we say something similar there? That the senses is supposed to be in control over the sense objects, but sometimes the object can control the senses, right?
Objects can control the senses. The senses helplessly gravitate towards the sense objects, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's the case where the sense objects seem to be controlling the senses.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I just find this interesting too, because, you know, like sense objects, they are inanimate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you would not normally think that inanimate objects can exercise control. Control seems to be a quality that that exists only for animate objects.
That is true. But here we are talking about, are senses animate? Is mind animate? Is intelligence animate? All of them are inanimate only.
No, yeah, but because we embody the soul, the jiva embodies, you know, the consciousness of the jiva pervades those things, but it's not pervading the sense objects.
Why not? So it's not pervading the sense object. It is pervading the mind, senses, and intelligence in the form of me consciousness, and it is pervading the sense object in the form of mind consciousness.
Mind, M-I-N-E.
M-I-N-E.
Really?
Don't you think? I mean, this is my pen, this is my house. They are all sense objects.
It doesn't seem like we can actually, like technically, we can't say that the consciousness of the jiva is inhabiting those sense objects, can we?
Well, because we don't see, that sense object as being physically separated from our body. So therefore, we may say that the soul, but the soul is very much remotely connected to that sense object, isn't it? That is why,
I guess so.
By identification in terms of this belongs to me.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, so that is why, I mean, in for all practical purposes, you do see the sense objects really controlling the senses.
Yes, and as you said, because I see it as mine, then in an extended way, my consciousness does occupy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Those things. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for that.
Okay. If there are no further questions, I think I saw something in the chat box. Then how to identify them so that we don't commit Vaishnava Aparadha? I mean, he's talking about if the perfected devotees are also whimsically acting, completely controlled by the sense objects, and if materialists also, then how do we identify them? Well, if you are in right association, we will know. It's difficult, but if you are in right association, we will definitely know that they are very exalted people. Like when people used such a externally crude personality, you know, sometimes even you know, using vulgar language to chastise his own deities. You know, he used to use such, sometimes in vulgar language, he used to chastise his own deities, his own personal deities. And other devotees who used to come, sometimes he used to, yeah, do like that. And people used to think, matlab, he is like, who is he? Matlab, so therefore, bhakti, but because they were, whoever was in the association of Bhaktisiddhanta Sastra Kaur, Bhaktisiddhanta Sastra Kaur identified him as a very exalted soul. And he told, go and collect remnants from him. Whenever he eats, you collect the remnants from him and send it to all the devotees. Every devotee should take. Okay. Someone says my voice broke in between. I am talking about Vamshidas Babaji Maharaj. So from an external point of view, he was such a crude personality, you know, using vulgar words sometimes to even criticize his own deities. But people who had the association of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, you know, spoke about the glories of Vamshidas Babaji Maharaj. He always arranged for two or three Gaudiya Math brahmacharis to keep following Vamshidas Babaji Maharaj wherever he went. And whenever he used to eat prasadam, their job was to collect the remnants of the when it is dried and it will no longer, you know, sort of become bad, they would pack that and send it to, you know, send it to different places, different Gaudiya Maths all over India. But look, can you imagine 3-4 brahmacharis while they could be traveling around preaching, doing book distribution, so many wonderful activities, they were dedicated, three of them, just to follow Vamshidas Babaji Maharaj wherever he was seemingly whimsically roaming around. And there was no fixed time when he would feed his deities, no fixed time when he would honor prasadam. Sometimes he may honor, sometimes he may not honor. But whenever he would honor, they would collect his remnants, dry it, pack it in, you know, whatever, pack it and post it to every single Gaudiya Math all over India so that they can get the remnants of Vamshidas Babaji Maharaj. So therefore, because they had the association of another exalted devotee in the form of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, they could find out. Similarly, we see in the case of Gaur Govind Maharaj also. So when Gaur Govind Maharaj was seemingly undergoing some health crisis, people were taking him to a doctor, people were taking him to an Ayurvedic Vaidya and all that, and no one could understand what was happening. And one day, Srila Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was passing by, so he stopped by and conscious, and he could understand what was happening. So he just wanted to confirm. So he took a very thin fiber of cotton and put it near the nose of Gaur Govind Maharaj, and then he exclaimed, you know, prema, prema, like that. And then he sort of made a comment like, now the whole world will know that Swami Maharaj, which is our Prabhupada, has given the right thing like that. So because one of his disciples, you know, he was showing symptoms of prema. So I mean, this is the thing, you know, so we have to have the right association of devotees, so that, I mean, we are not supposed to be disrespectful towards anyone for that matter, because you never know. Anyway, I think I'm very sort of distracted today. I'm not very steady in coherent in what I'm speaking, especially also because the internet is creating issues. And also, you know, I started discussing something and then I got really carried away and, you know, started discussing something. So I think let me now start becoming little steady and start presenting properly. So we were discussing laulya, and there are three types of laulya. One is restlessness, greed and desire. And then he said restlessness is of two types: restlessness of mind and restlessness of intelligence. So we were now going to discuss of the mind. So in that we saw mind has the propensity for following the dictates of the senses. When the mind follows the dictates of the senses and becomes absorbed in a particular subject, attachment or aversion arises, raga or dvesha arises. Therefore, restlessness of the mind is of two types: restlessness due to attachment and restlessness due to aversion. So what we will try to do while we are doing this, we will try to make a sort of mind map here only. Okay. So this is restlessness of the mind due to attachment and aversion. So in the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Indriyanam hi charatam. You see, this was the verse that I quoted. Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano anuvidiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayur namam ivambasi. Even one of the moving senses which the mind follows steals away the intelligence as wind moves a boat on the water. So this is this hierarchy. This is the hierarchy of the materialist. Senses is running after the sense objects, and that running senses are pulling the mind, and that running mind is pulling the intelligence. This is the hierarchy of a materialist. Again, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Indriyasya indriyasyarte ragadvesho vyavastitau tayor na vasham agachet tauhyasya paripantinau. So he says, attachment and repulsion are firmly fixed in each of the sense objects. One should of attachment and repulsion. They are the two obstacles. So he says, don't come under the control of raga and dvesha, attachment and repulsion. So in order to regulate laulya in the form of restlessness of the mind, one has to take shelter of Goddess Bhakti Devi. So what is the solution for the solution is take shelter of Bhakti Devi, which means regulate the senses, give senses engagement, Krishna conscious engagement, constant Krishna conscious engagement. So give the senses constant Krishna conscious engagement. The instruction of Bhakti Devi is this: when the cause of the mind's restlessness is sense gratification, and this restlessness is the main obstacle in the practice of devotional service, then all the sensual activities should be dovetailed in the service of the Lord, and the attachment to the sense gratification should be transformed into attachment for the Lord. So this is what Bhagavad Gita says. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that there are three places of residence of lust. Okay. He says mind, senses, and intelligence. Okay. So, the easiest way of addressing lust is on the platform of senses. So he says, Tasmatvam indriyanyadav niyamya bharatarishabha. Papmanam prajahihyenam jnana vijnana nashanam. So Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, start with the senses. Start with the senses. Start by regulating the senses. So which means, when the senses start getting Krishna conscious engagements, okay, so the nature of mind is to think, okay, and mind will think about those impressions which are collected by the senses. Okay, the senses collect all the impressions. When the senses are engaged in sense objects and they get a particular experience, that experience is stored in the mind in the form of vasanas or impressions. Okay. Then as long as there are material impressions, the mind cannot but help think about any spiritual subject matter. So, mind's thinking, feeling and willing cannot be controlled if it is constantly receiving material impressions which are collected through the senses. So, senses should be first engaged in senses should first get Krishna conscious engagement. So, when senses start getting Krishna conscious engagements, then that gets passed on to the mind is all Krishna conscious. Then when constantly Krishna conscious impressions are only passed on to the mind, then the mind is forced to think about Krishna consciousness. So therefore, the means of controlling the mind, if we want to train the mind to think, feel and will about Krishna, then that should start with the regulation of senses. When the senses are dovetailed in Krishna's activities, in Krishna conscious activities, then the mind will get input only in the form of Krishna conscious impressions. So when the Krishna conscious mind gets only Krishna conscious impressions, it has no other choice but to think of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, he says, how do you regulate laulyam in the form of restlessness of mind? It is possible only by taking shelter of Bhakti Devi. And what does it mean? Give Krishna conscious engagements to the senses. So the point is, and that is easy. To think of Krishna is very difficult. But to chant Krishna's names is not difficult. So can you share your thoughts? Which is more difficult? To make your tongue chant Krishna's name or to make your mind think of Krishna? Which is more difficult? Which is more difficult? To make your tongue chant Krishna or to make your mind think of Krishna? Which is more difficult? Yes, Mother Gail. I thought I asked a simple question. Yeah, yes. Go
ahead. I mean, in my opinion, it's more difficult to have the mind think of Krishna.
Correct, right?
I think so.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I'm sure if anyone has any other opinion that I seriously want to discuss, because you know, it is easier to mechanically chant, but to make the mind focus is very difficult. You can mechanically hear Krishna Katha. You can allow the sound of Krishna to enter into your ears, but we cannot make our mind think. But now the next question is, what is more difficult for the mind? Is it easier for the mind to think of Krishna when the eyes are looking at the deities, or when the eyes are looking at television? You can just type quickly on your chat box. Of course, for the mind, it is always difficult to think of Krishna. But relatively, I am asking, is it easier for the mind to think of Krishna when our eyes are looking at the deity, or when the eyes are looking at the television? Okay, another question. Is it easier for our mind to think of Krishna when our ears are hearing about Prajalpa or rap music or something, or when our ears are hearing some bhajans and kirtans? When is it easy for our mind to think of Krishna? Which way? Bhajan, right? Bhajan kirtan, right? So the point is that it is always difficult for the mind to think of Krishna, but when the senses are providing Krishna conscious inputs to the mind to think about it. So this is what I call as surface impression management, you know. So there are in our mind, so let us say this is our mind. Just imagine, I don't know, mind does not look like this, but just imagine this is our mind, okay, and our mind has, this is the surface of the mind, and this is the inner recess. Okay, so so this mind is filled with impressions. Okay, so the impressions are collected by the senses. When the senses come in touch with the sense objects, and then it generates an impression, and that impression is stored in the mind. Okay. So, and the newer, the latest sense object, when the senses then come in touch with sense objects, the latest impressions are stored on the surface. And the mind generally accesses the surface impressions. The latest sense gratification is what mind constantly keeps thinking about. So all we need to do is, when our ears are engaged in hearing Krishna Katha, when our eyes are engaged in looking at the deities, mechanically, we don't have to engage our mind, just our senses. And when our tongue is involved in tasting Krishna Prasadam, when our nose is involved in smelling the fragrance of Agarbatti offered to the Lord, like that, then what happens? Again and again, day in and day out, week after week, month after month, then the surface layer is filled with only Krishna conscious impressions. Right? So, and the mind keeps accessing that. And the nature of the mind is that it wants pleasure. But it will seek pleasure from it will seek maximum pleasure from whatever is available. Even though mind may naturally, for a conditioned soul, mind may naturally enjoy material things, material objects. But if you are providing only spiritual objects, then the mind recalibrates and it starts searching pleasure from whatever is available. That is the nature of mind. So, if we keep on engaging our senses, mechanically in Krishna's activities, then automatically, gradually but automatically, the mind will start dwelling upon those spiritual impressions. This is why many times we very much emphasize on the importance of not performing mechanical devotional service. We think that we should not perform mechanical devotional service. We should invest our heart in it. We should invest our mind in it. But we think that we say that spontaneous devotional service is better than mechanical devotional service. But spontaneous devotional service is far away. We are at the level of spontaneous sense gratification. The only thing that is spontaneous for us is sense gratification. So therefore, what Krishna is telling here is mechanical devotional service is better than spontaneous sense gratification. And of course, spontaneous devotional service is definitely better than mechanical sense gratification, mechanical devotional service. But for us, it is not a question of mechanical devotional service versus spontaneous devotional service. It is a question of spontaneous sense gratification versus mechanical devotional service. So Krishna is telling engage in mechanical devotional service means just ensure that your senses are engaged in Krishna conscious activities. Man lage ya na lage. So once I will share one some very interesting anecdote. One devotee, once His Holiness Gaur Krishna Maharaj, the disciple of His Holiness Radha Govind Maharaj, who passed away a few years back, one of the devotees, he was asking him in Hindi. I will translate it for those of you who may not know Hindi. He was asking him, "Kya aapka japa chal raha hai ki nahi? Are you chanting or not?" He told, "Nahi Maharaj." "No Maharaj, I am not chanting." Maharaj asked, "Kyun nahi? Why not?" He said, "Man nahi lag raha hai Maharaj. My mind is not cooperating." Like that he told. So Maharaj asked, "Kya japa nahi karne se man lag jayega?" So he said, "If you by not chanting, do you think your mind will start cooperating one day?" Like that. So the point is that we think that my mind should somehow feel the taste. When my mind feels the taste, then automatically I will start doing it. But it will never feel the taste. Because we are giving all kinds of material by engaging our senses in material sense gratification. We are feeding the mind only material impressions, material vasanas. How will that mind then think about Krishna? We want our mind to think of Krishna while we constantly keep engaging our senses in material activities. So then the mind will also get only material impressions and mind will dwell on that. So Krishna is telling here, tasmatvam indriyani adau niyamya bhartarishabha. First start regulating the senses. Regulating means give Krishna conscious engagement. Then mind can be controlled. Otherwise, it is like, so controlling the mind while engaging the senses in sense objects is like, I'll ask you a question. You have a broom in your hand. Okay. Let us imagine that you are in a room which has three windows and one door, and outside a storm is raging. Okay. And dust is flying inside the room from all the windows and doors, and you want to clean the room, you have a broom in your hand. What will be your step one? So there is a storm raging outside your room. You have three windows and one door, and dust is coming in from the three windows and one door, and you have a broom in your hand and you want to clean the room. What is the first thing you will do? People have started answering. Yes, you got it right. You will first close the door and windows, right? I hope you don't start brooming, you know, while dust is coming from all the doors and windows. You know, the first thing you should do is to close the doors and windows. And once the doors and windows are closed, then you start brooming, right? Then brooming becomes so much more easy. So to think that my mind will think of Krishna while my senses can keep engaging in sense gratification is like brooming the house while keeping the windows and doors open. So how much ever we keep brooming, fresh dust will keep coming inside, right? So therefore, how do we address this? We are talking about lavlyam. Lavlyam has three meanings. One of the meaning is restlessness, another is greed, another is desire. And restlessness is of two types, restlessness of the mind and intelligence. And the restlessness of the mind can be addressed by taking shelter of Bhakti Devi, which means to give Krishna conscious engagement to the senses first. Right. So, therefore, it is very important that before we think of the basic thing that we need to do before overcoming the problem of mechanical devotional service is to actually come out of the platform of spontaneous sense gratification and come at least to the level of mechanical devotional service. Many times we hear, which is true also, many times we hear morality is the lack of opportunity. People say that morality is nothing but lack of opportunity. So which means, why is a person moral? Because he lacks the opportunity for being immoral. If the opportunity was available, probably he would have been immoral. So people say that morality is just lack of opportunities. But what Krishna says, lack of opportunity is a good starting point to developing actual morality. Okay. So if the senses have proper Krishna conscious engagement and have no scope for sense gratificatory opportunity, then it is a good starting. Moral means what? When the mind is not thinking. So when will the mind not think? When there is lack of opportunity. When there is lot of opportunity and when there is attachment, the mind will naturally think about it. Right? So that's what here he is mentioning. In order to regulate lavlya in the form of restlessness of the mind, one has to take shelter of the goddess Bhakti Devi. Instruction of Bhakti Devi is this: when the cause of the mind's restlessness is sense gratification, and this restlessness is the main obstacle in the practice of devotional service, then all sensual activities should be dovetailed in the service of the Lord, and the attachment to sense gratification should be transformed into attachment for the Lord. Then the mind becomes fixed in devotional service by taking shelter of that attachment. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the sense of touch are called knowledge acquiring senses or Gyanendriyas. The hands, the legs, the anus, and so on are the working senses. These are the Karmendriyas. When the objects of all these senses are associated within a devotional mood, then the mind becomes fixed on the Lord. So when the senses becomes the senses are engaged in Krishna conscious activities, then gradually the mind becomes fixed on the Lord. Taste, form, smell, touch and sound. These are the objects of the senses. One has to arouse a mood of devotion in all these objects and enjoy them. Then devotional service is cultivated. Right? Kirtaya Keshavam Muradipum Cheto Vajas Sridharam Panit Dhanva Samarchayachyuta Kada Shrota Dvayattam Shunu Krishnam Lokaya Lochana Dvaya Harer and so on, you know, or even Savai Manak Krishna Padaravintayo Vachamsi Vaikunta Gunanu Varnane Karo Harer Mandira Marjana Dishu Shrutim Chakara Achyuta Shatta Dodaya and so on. You know, this is the case of Ambarish Maharaj, where he was engaging all the senses in an activity connected to Krishna. So then gradually the mind follows. Right. So among the objects of the senses, aversion should be applied on any that are unfavorable for devotional service, and attachment should be applied on that are favorable for devotional service. This is the role of intelligence. So now the intelligence is guiding the mind. Okay. So the intelligence is guiding the mind. So what does the intelligence say? What is the nature of mind, attachment and aversion? What does the intelligence say? Look, I know you are attached to sense gratification, but you want to get Krishna Prem, right? Mind says, yes. I want to get Krishna Prem. So he says, if you want to get Krishna Prem, then you have to accept those things which are favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject those which are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. Okay. So these things are favorable for Krishna consciousness, and these things are unfavorable. Okay, so attached to whatever is favorable for devotional service and develop aversion for whatever is unfavorable for devotional service. Simple. This is what the intelligence is. On one side, you are engaging the senses, you are giving the senses Krishna conscious engagement, and on the other side, you are allowing the intelligence to guide the mind as to what is favorable for attaining your ultimate goal and what is unfavorable for attaining your ultimate goal. So in this way, the mind is the strongest of the three, and it gets tackled from both the sides. On one side, it gets tackled by the senses, and on the other side, it gets tackled by the intelligence. Okay. So he says, but until the restlessness of the intelligence is vanquished, how will the restlessness of the mind be checked? So now the intelligence has to give the guidance to the mind in terms of what is anukul for bhakti, what is pratikul for bhakti. But if that intelligence itself is restless, how can it guide the mind? Right? So when the restlessness of the intelligence is vanquished, the mind can regulate attachment and aversion for sense objects by the strength of the intelligence. So basically, the solution for restlessness of the mind is, on one side, give Krishna conscious engagement for the senses, and on other side, sharpen the intelligence through scriptures. Scriptures, guru and sadhu. So in this way, the mind is sandwiched between the intelligence and senses. Okay, like that. So, yeah. Anyway, any quick comments, discussion points, questions, anything anyone would like to share as to add on this topic? Okay, there is something in the chat box. Naiva kinchit karomi iti yukto manyeta chat pavit pashyan shanman sprashan jakhran ashnan gatchan sukhan sushan pralapan visajan pranan umishan nivishan napi indriyan indriyar teshu vartanda iti dharayan. Okay. A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, etc., always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, etc., he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with the sense objects and that he is aloof from them. How to relate this verse with our devotional service? Well, that is the that is meant for a jnani. How he regulates his mind running after sense objects. He regulates his mind by telling that, look, are you getting any happiness? This is not real happiness. This is just your senses touching your sense objects. That's all. So it's a very intellectual way of addressing the point. While it's not that we don't have this understanding, devotees also have this understanding, but on a more practical level, when the senses themselves are getting Krishna conscious engagement, then the mind also need not, you don't have to stop the natural propensity of the mind to run after the senses. Just give them some Krishna conscious engagements and let the mind like it, rather than telling don't like mind, do not like it, because it is just senses coming in touch with sense objects. But in that way, the propensity of the mind is not completely satisfied. But in the case but for devotees, the propensity of the mind is dovetailed. So, like that. Anyway, so there is another question in the chat box. In the case of children, how to convince them as they are more attracted to digital media? How to engage their intelligence in Krishna consciousness as they don't have taste? Well, if they don't have taste, we cannot force also. Because if they don't have taste means probably they have not yet become devotees probably. But it's okay. In that case, them, we can try to make activities of Krishna consciousness as much fun and enjoyable as possible, so that they also get some gratification out of practicing Krishna conscious activities also. That is the only thing that we can do. And what to speak of children, even we grown up adults are also attracted to digital media only. But just that our intelligence is somewhat, we do understand what is favorable, what is unfavorable. Our situation is little better, but still our senses are very much attached to these kind of instant gratification. Yeah, correct. Another question in the chat box. So in this verse, the tattvavit is not referring to the devotee, but a jnani. Yes, correct. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so any other question, comments, thoughts? So that is about restlessness. So we saw two types of solutions. Restlessness of the mind. We saw two types of solution. One is to take shelter of Bhakti Devi, or which means Krishna conscious, engagement to senses, and the second is sharpen the intelligence using Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Like that. So, but now he says that, if I have to use my intelligence to control the restlessness of the mind, first thing, my intelligence should not be restless. So, how do I address the restlessness of the intelligence? This is the next question. Okay. So now we are talking about restlessness of the intelligence, because laulya means restlessness, desire, and greed. Okay. First, we are discussing about restlessness, and restlessness is of two types: restlessness of mind and restlessness of intelligence. So we did discuss about restlessness of mind, how it can be addressed. Now we are discussing restlessness of intelligence. How do we address restlessness of intelligence? So he says, the intelligence is that which discriminates between mind's good and bad propensities. So the nature of intelligence, it thinks in terms of what is right and what is wrong. The nature of mind is, it thinks in terms of what I like and what I dislike. So, intelligence is that which discriminates between what is right and what is wrong. The intelligence is of two types: resolute intelligence and many branched intelligence. Bahu shaka hyanantascha buddhayo avyavasayina. The beginning of that verse, anyone? Today my memory is deserting me completely. My mind, intelligence, everything is deserting me. What is the beginning of this verse? Yeah, vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha purandana bahu shaka hyanantascha buddhayo avyavasayana. So, the intelligence is of two types: resolute intelligence and many branched intelligence. There is one type of resolute intelligence, and there are unlimited types of many branched intelligence. And resolute intelligence is possible only in bhakti. Because in bhakti, there is only one object of worship, which is Krishna, one goal of worship, which is prema, and only one sadhana, which is bhakti. But in karma or jnana, but in jnana, if you see, on the path of jnana, there is one object of worship, which is the Lord. Okay. One goal of worship, which is liberation. But the sadhana is many. Path of jnana is there, along with that, first you have to perform perfect karma, and then it has to have the element of bhakti also. So there has to be mixed focus on 2-3 sadhanas. So therefore, and even though here the sadhana and the goal may look different, so what is sadhana? Shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam, pada sevanam, etc. And what is prema? Shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, etc. There is no difference between sadhana and sadhya. The goal is, the goal and the means of attaining the goal are the same. So therefore, one need not specifically focus on the goal and the means of attaining the goal. So in that way, the intelligence, all it has to focus on is only Shravanam Kirtanam. Right? But in karma, if you see, there are many goals, and when it comes to sadhana of karma, there is karma yoga, then there is bhakti also, that you have to perform for that karma to be successful. So in that way, if you see, one-pointed intelligence is possible only in bhakti. One-pointed intelligence is not possible in jnana, and it is even more difficult on the path of karma. Like that. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahu shaka hyanantascha buddhayo avyavasayana. Resolute intelligence is only one in this process, O son of gurus. So irresolute has many branches of action and unlimited desires. Disturbances such as lust, desire to attain the heavenly planets, increasing activities that produce enjoyment and opulence, and rejection of the spiritual world all arise from many branched intelligence of irresolute persons. So these irresolute persons, they have lust for different things of this material world, heavenly planets, opulence, material enjoyment like that. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned, Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya apahrita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhihi samadhauna vidiyate. Bhoga aishwarya prasaktanam, those who are very much attached to enjoyment and power, taya apahrita chetasam, and one whose consciousness is completely kidnapped by the desire for enjoyment and power, Vyavasayatmika buddhi, one-pointed attention, one-pointed intelligence, or resolute intelligence, na vidiyate, samadhav, samadhav na vidiyate. It does not take place within the mind. The resolute intelligence does not take place in the mind. So those whose intelligence is fixed in samadhi are transcendentally situated and they have steady minds. Their symptoms are given in Bhagavad Gita. As Arjuna asks, Sthita pragyasya kabasha samadhistasya keshava sthitavir kim prabhasheta kim asita vajeta. O Arjuna, what are the symptoms of a person whose mind is fixed in samadhi? What are his symptoms? Speak, how does he sit, how does he walk, meaning how does he respond to agitating situations, how does he keep his senses, unengaged during vulnerable situations, and how does he engage his senses when it is needed, like that he has. So Krishna says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmanyevatmana tushtah sthita pragyastadochate. So what are the symptoms of a self-realized person? So he says, yada prajahati, one who completely gives up sarvan manogatan kaman, all desires which are arising from the mind alone. So manogatan kaman means desires born out of material impressions within the mind. Yada prajahati mano sarvan manogatan kaman atmanyeva atmanatushta, and is satisfied with the soul alone by the mind, he is called as Tilak Pragya. So such a person, he is not at all affected by sense objects. Dukkesh anudvignamana, sukesh vigataspraha, vitaraga vayakrodha sthitadir munirachyate. Such a person is not grieved by the appearance of suffering, and he does not get and who has given up the desire to enjoy during the opportunity, when there is an opportunity for happiness, he is not very eager to enjoy. When there is suffering, he does not become overly grieved, and he has given up attachment, fear and anger. Such a person is called as Tetapragya. So, oh, okay, this is, I think, a long discussion here. Okay. So here we are talking about two types of intelligence. One is resolute intelligence and another is many branched intelligence. So resolute intelligence is, we saw the symptoms of resolute intelligence are, you can say a person is no longer meditating on the objects of material, about material sense gratification, and he is constantly meditating on the soul, like that. And he is not at all grieved by the dualities, when suffering comes, he is not overly grieved. And when the opportunity for happiness comes, he is not overly excited. And he is devoid of attachment, fear and anger. Such a person is called as the Tathagata. So he says, these two verses from the Gita clarify the process of tolerating the urges of speech, mind and anger as recommended in the first verse of Śrīmad-Bhāgavatamṛta. Now it should be known that there are two types of intelligence. Mundane intelligence and spiritual intelligence. Okay. Mundane intelligence. The propensity to discriminate between good and bad under the dictation of the mind is called mundane intelligence. You see, you remember, we saw the hierarchy, right? Sense object is controlling the sense, which is controlling the mind, which is controlling the intelligence. Okay, this is this hierarchy. The propensity to discriminate between good and bad under the dictation of the mind is called mundane intelligence. So this is mundane intelligence. What is spiritual intelligence? The intelligence to discriminate between good and bad under the dictation of the soul is called spiritual intelligence. You remember the opposite hierarchy. The soul controls the intelligence, which controls the mind, which controls the senses, which controls the sense objects. This is spiritual intelligence. That is why in the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Indriyani Paranyahur. Same verse he quotes, you see. Indriyani Paranyahur, Indriyebhya Parammanaha, Manasastu Parabuddhir, Yo Buddhe Paratastasar. This higher hierarchy is that of spiritual intelligence. The intelligence also perversely accepts materialism only when under the control of the false ego. When under the control of the pure ego in the form of identifying oneself as servant of Krishna, the intelligence is always naturally pure. Therefore, the Vedas establish the knower of the body is intelligent. Okay. Yes, Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, how does the soul dictate the intelligence? We can understand intelligence being dictated by mind, but how does the soul dictate the intelligence?
Soul can dictate the intelligence when one is self-realized. Otherwise, when we are not in touch with the soul, then and if you are not self-realized, then the soul cannot actually dictate the intelligence.
For us, that is only the self-realized souls or perfected devotees can have spiritual intelligence.
Both of them.
That's what. Not in the sadhaka stage. Only the perfect.
In the sadhaka stage, what is the need of the soul is communicated to the intelligence through the shastras, not directly by the soul. So for us,
so we can say spiritual intelligence is that which is guided by shastra, not by the mind.
For us, that's what it is.
Okay, so there are two levels of spiritual intelligence: one for sadhakas, another for self-realized persons.
Yeah.
Okay, Prabhu, thank you.
Okay, I think this is enough. It is okay. Purushottam Prasad.
Yes, Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for this detailed presentation. A small clarification about the previous devotee asked the question. So, even for the sadhaka, though he is doing sadhana, but predominantly which mode he is, accordingly we choose the verses also from the script, isn't it? From the scripture,
so can you please repeat, because I lost your voice in between.
Okay. Though the sadhaka is guided by the scripture, the conditioned soul still will choose the verse which is favorable to his desire, correct?
That is why it should be Guru, Sadhu and Shastra.
Yeah. Not only just scripture, it has to be aligned with Sadhu Shastra. Yeah, thank you,
Prabhu. That is why wherever there is a misalignment, if we tend to take the scriptures words according to our modes, the sadhu and guru will say no, not like that.
Yeah.
So they will correct it.
Thank you, Prabhu. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I think we have discussed a lot of material today, and it must be quite confusing. So I think we will pause here and continue this discussion next week. So thank you all very much for your patient listening, and I really apologize. First, I joined late because of problem with my Zoom. Then there were internet issues where my voice was breaking in between. And on top of that, I was myself not very organized in my thoughts and presentation today. So I myself feel very embarrassed, so I'm sorry. So next week I will try to do better. So thank you very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation despite my missing around. So thank you very much. We will meet again next week. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Thank you.